Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026.
Today, present value and future value. This is where you will see the Excel templates that I have created for the different classes of problems, quantitative problems, in this course. Now, you can always do them by formulas, or you can do them by hand with a calculator or pencil and paper, however you want. These speed up the process of getting the answers the Excel sheets do. And if you become comfortable with them, you will find that a lot of these problems that are actually rather difficult, especially if you've never done things like this before, they become very quick routines. You just have to know where to put the numbers in. But before we go any further with that, let me do a quick look at the numbers so that we can see how things are going today in the markets. The markets are actually really lackluster on this side of the world. Over on the other side of the world last night, you had a really strong upstroke on the Nikkei 225, 2.25% up, and then Hong Kong was looking good. Oh, well, not great, but it was at least up. As you can see, it was pretty bullish over in Asia, even in Australia. Australia had a good, decent day too. But now you come over to Europe, and Europe was quite lackluster, just like the United States is. There's a sort of a wait-and-see kind of attitude, what's going to happen next around the Western world. And as you can see, you've got all these different, the DAX was down a little bit, 0.5%. CAC was just a little bit down. And then the FTSE actually had a very strong day. London was in a pretty good mood, up 1.14%. But you get here to this side of the Atlantic, and you see the Dow is just kind of down a little bit, negative. It's down about 0.25%. The S&P 500 is struggling to just stay level. It's up 0.04%. And the NASDAQ is down, a little bit, but it's nothing spectacular. There is a building sentiment that this whole thing is going to burst and we're going to have a drop, but no one knows when it will happen, although there are those who believe it's going to be very soon. The bulls are still the short run bet of choice, but a little bit longer term, the bears, they're almost anyone I talk to says, yeah, the floor is going to drop out. Well, when? Well, I don't know until it, well, what do we do in the meantime? Well, just, you know, follow the bull market. Okay, whatever. Now, as you can see down here in the commodities, gold is definitely making its move back up. It's at about $5,100 an ounce. So it's recovering the loss. It had a major drop a couple of weeks ago, but it's recovering as I said it would. It's making it back up. Now, the nasty one is here, Brent, and the overall crude is at 65. It's up from, it had gotten as low as the mid to upper 50s, and now it's on its way back up, and Brent is following it up. We have, there's kind of like, I read a trader who said that there's that 65-70 that we are all watching for. So now we've got 65 on the crude, and the light sweet is at almost 70, not quite there yet. So that's kind of like, wait, let's see if it gets to there. And then from there, it's just going to keep going up from there. And that will mean higher gas prices, higher fuel prices in general. Energy will go up in cost, and that will push us further into recessionary territory. But for now, we can just kind of hope that it stays quiet for at least for a while more, until you guys can get your internships and jobs maybe. Looking at the sector map, it is still, like I said, almost always you're going to see the technology in the green. In other words, those big companies that sort of more or less run the big side of market cap stocks, that's green, as it usually is. Once in a while, it flashes red, but not often. Financial services, that would be banks, things like that, that's having a down day. And and there are a few others, consumer cyclicals and things like that are down. But overall, the map is more green than red, which tells us that more there's a bullish rather than a bearish market. Like I said, the market is still in bullish territory. The sentiment is still leaning toward the bulls. It is not a bear market right now. That will change very quickly, but when it will change, no one knows. If we did, we'd already be making our positions, taking our positions on the bear side. I want to show you something here. I'm going to take a couple of stocks and see if this is what happens. Yeah, okay. The first thing I'll do is I want to show you another holding period return. And then what you're going to do is you're going to take your first spreadsheet and upload and download it from files, the Canvas files spreadsheets. And that is a simple template. All it does is calculate 1 year holding period returns. The first one I'll do like I did on Monday, where we'll just straight up calculate it with using a calculator. And for lack of anything more creative, let me do Starbucks, SBUX. Now, as you can see, Starbucks, it has a beta slightly below 1.94. So it's about 94% of the volatility of returns of the world portfolio, of the market itself. It's a little bit less aggressive than a market portfolio. But let's see how it turns out if we check in on it to see the holding period return. Now, I would want to do 100. The ending projected value in exactly 1 year is $100.16. Now, we will divide that by the current price. 1 year, you're going to buy it today and dump it in a year. So the current price is the dividend, the one in the denominator in arithmetic terms, which is 98.62. Minus 1 equals times 100. Try that again. Times 100. So the capital gain on this stock is a lousy 1.56%. In other words, the price will rise. You will make a 1.56% return on the stock price appreciation. But we also need to add in the dividend yield, which in this case is 2.54%. So plus 2.54%. So your total 1 year holding period return would be a lousy 4.10%. The beta is nearly the market, and yet you're earning only 4.10%. Starbucks actually is not very impressive. You would probably want to go with some of those I showed you yesterday, like Verizon and all of that. So let's try another one here just to get you comfortable with doing it with a calculator before I show you the Excel way to do it. So we're going to pull in one more here. I don't know. Let me look at Kroger for lack of any better inspiration. Kroger. And we see that Kroger is a very safe stock, 0.63. Well, we shouldn't expect much of a return. Let's see what we get. We look at the 1 year projected value, it's 73.50. And then we divide that by the current price, which we see up here is 68.85. Oops, let's try that again. Clear. Sorry about that. Let's try that one more time. 73.50 divided by, and we'll come up here, 68.85 minus 1 equals times 100. Something went wrong there. Let's try that one more time. And this is actually, although I didn't mean to do it, this is a good reason why an Excel sheet is a better approach. 73.50 divided by 68.82 minus 1 times 100 equals. So the capital gain return, just the price appreciation, you're going to earn 6.80%. You're projected to, I should say. So it's already much more desirable than Starbucks. And then we're going to add in the dividend plus, what was the dividend yield? 2.01%. So your total one-year holding period return on Kroger is 6.81%. You've got a lower beta than Starbucks and a higher projected one-year return on Kroger. That tells you clearly that Kroger is a dominant investment versus Starbucks. If you had a choice between the two, the numbers are pointing to Kroger and pointing away from Starbucks in this kind of analysis. Now let me take you on the journey by getting you your first of the two templates for today. You go to files, and I want you to do this with me. Because if you can get this down, how to use my Excel templates. Not only is it going to be a lot faster for you to do these in your homework, on quizzes, and on exams. And by the way, we're having a surprise quiz on Wednesday of next week. Not only will it be easier to do these in your homework, but when you get to quizzes and exams, if you know how to use these Excel sheets, and you will have them available to you in the Respondus Lockdown browser, you will be able to do some of the most complicated problems in this course in less than a minute, in some cases less than 30 seconds. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going here to files in Canvas, and then you go to your spreadsheets. The first one we're going to do is download, using the three vertical dots, download holding period return. And here he comes. Enable your editing. All you have to do is put in a beginning price and the ending price. Whoops, I didn't mean to do that. That didn't work out so well. Try that again. Let me go over here, see if I can get back to my Starbucks. Okay, there we go. So let's do the Starbucks one, Starbucks again. All you do in the template is push in the beginning price, 68.81. You put it 68.81. Let's try that one more time. 68.81. You put in the ending price, which was what? The projected 1 year is 73.50. 73.50. And then you push in the dividend yield, 2.01%, and there's your answer. Now, let me explain my templates to you. Do you see the orangish peach colored ones and the blue ones? If you touch those, if you put any number in there, you will die. Try it. Go ahead. Test me. Don't touch those. Now, whenever you bring one of these templates of mine down, after you finish using it, don't save it. And so I'll just use it as my saved version. Because if you do make a mistake and kill a formula or something like that, downloading it again, you're starting fresh. Otherwise, you might be bringing up a sheet that you saved and then it might have an error in it because you accidentally did something. That's really an important thing to remember. Okay? So there you are. That's all there is to it. Now let me go do another one. Let's do Coca-Cola. KO. Coca-Cola doesn't even have a beta. That's weird. That's odd. Well, let me do it anyway. So we'll just put in the beginning value, 7880. No, I want that. 7880. And then you put in the ending price, which here is 8102. And then you put in the dividend yield, which is 2.66%. And there's your answer, that fast. The good thing about doing these Excel templates is once you have constructed it, you don't keep having to do the arithmetic operators, the divided bys, the pluses, the parentheses. That's where you usually, at least, and I do, is that's where the mistakes are usually made, is in trying to put in all the plus, minus, divided by, times 100, and all that. By using Excel, the formula is actually baked in, and all that you're doing is putting in the raw numbers to bring out the results that you want. And this is what's going to happen every time for every kind of quantitative problem I give you from now on. You need only know where the numbers go. If it's a word problem, all you do is pull the numbers out of the words. I taught math at the Ohio State University for many years, and I made sure that they understood that the words are there only to tell you where to put a number in a formula. Don't panic on the words. This is true to this day in Excel. Get the numbers and forget about the words and get your answer. So this is the first one, and it's a very simple one. Some of my spreadsheets, they look like they have a lot of moving parts, but they are just like this. Put numbers in white spaces, and remember what happens to you if you ever touch an orange or a blue cell. You got it? So when I do this on the next quiz, HPR, it should take you maybe about 10 seconds to key in the numbers, and you got your answer. And you know it will be the right answer if all you had to do was put the numbers in the right cell, white cells, and it's finished for you. So that's your first exposure to this. And let me take this one off the board. Now what I want to do now, right now, no, don't save it. What I want to do now is introduce you to the 800-pound gorilla, your first one that's big. Now there's one that is absolutely mind-boggling. It's actually not hard to use, but you can show off by leaving that on your screen and have people marvel at the complexity of it. But this one is sort of like a nice Swiss Army knife. It does any kind of problem you would want to do with present and future values. Now, I am assuming that you were introduced to present and future values in your accounting classes. Am I right about that? The thing, though, about it is that, am I wrong? Do they still use tables to find the present and future value factors and all that? Yep. Welcome to the 19th century. We use Excel in this class. Now, I've gotten even some bitching from some who say, well, they should know how to do the tables. Well, guess where the tables came from? They came from calculations on old computers, and then they put them in a table. So you're just hiding what we do in modern business by worrying about that. Now, the one I want you to download is present and future value. Download it. And this one is a great big MF. It has present and future values of lump sums, present and future values of annuities. And then it has perpetuities, and I'll explain each of these in its turn. Oh yeah, if you ever see the hashes, all that means is that the cell, the column is too tight. Just go up to the middle here and double click and it will open to what you want to see. I thought everyone knew that, but I've run into enough students who say there's just pound signs there. And all that means is that the cell is too narrow, just double click and it'll widen to the perfect width. Okay, now there's perpetuities. Now, this is something I'll probably talk about, just mention, amortization table. Loans are actually just a version of an annuity, a present value annuity. And all an amortization table does is just show you how much your payments are going to interest and how much is going to principal every month as you slowly pay off the loan. I'll leave that one alone. And then there's one called annualization, where you can actually turn any holding period into an annual holding period. That's called annualization. The formula for it is kind of a pain in the butt, but we can make that a lot easier. Now let me walk through these with you and explain what I'm doing, just the terminology. First of all, and I am going to write a formula on the board, but I'm kind of just showing it to you. For a lump sum, in other words, you've just got a simple amount of money. And we can talk about that amount of money here in the present and find out what it's worth in the future, or we can talk about an amount of money in the future and what it's worth now. Whenever I find a present value, I am discounting. Whenever I find a future value, I am compounding. Present value, discounting. Future value, compounding. Now the formula for a lump sum, the present value, the future value of a lump of money, just a plop of money, is going to be equal to what it is worth now times 1 plus r to the t power. The only thing that you really have to be careful about if you're using the formula is that r is a periodic discount rate. In other words, r is the APR, the annual percentage rate, divided by how many times a year you compound it. So if I say I am compounding quarterly, madam, how many times a year is that? Bingo. If I say semi-annually, how many would that be? Good. Now you, if I say weekly, good. Do you know how many people don't know how many weeks there are in a year? Really? Hourly. You got nothing. Okay, semi is two times a year. Weekly, there's biweekly. And that's 52 divided by 2, so 26 compounding. The only reason we bring that up is that a lot of wage workers are paid biweekly. So, you know, that's one that we keep in our hat. And monthly is very common. Monthly is 12. A lot of annuities work on a monthly payment, like car loans are monthly. Rental payments are monthly. Salaries for salaried employees are monthly. So we want to keep in mind that if I were to say, for example, that the annual percentage rate, the APR, which is usually what we talk about, is an annual percentage rate. Let's say that that is 6%. Then if the compoundings, it's just annual, 1, that'd be 6% divided by 1. So it's the compounded rate is 6.00%. If I said that the compoundings are, it's semi-annual compounding, that'd be 6% divided by 2, which would be 3%. And on down, 4, 6, 12, 365 days. I'll caution something about the if it's daily compounding. It's weird because technically that is 365 or 360. There's a conventional thing goes back centuries. Instead of 365 days in a year, you'll see some problems, and I think the book mentions this, where there are 360 banker's days in a year. The reason this 360 has been used so traditionally in many places is that there is an arithmetic way to divide numbers by 360 with pencil and paper. And so back in the old days, before calculators, Wall Street, banks, all of them used 360 days because it was quick. There's a mathematical trick for dividing by 360. And don't ask me what it is. I barely remember it myself. But anyway, but notice something here. Do you see that present and future values here? I don't need to know that. All you have to do is put in how many years it's going to take, the number of periods per year. All you have to do is put in the number of periods per year and the APR. And you can get either a present value if you want to know what something out there is worth now, or a future value if you want to know what something that you have now is worth at some time in the future. So in other words, I could say, okay, I'm going to get one payment of, let's say, $4,250. Now, the prevailing, I want to hold that for, let's say, 10 years in a bank account that pays, that compounds interest 4 times a year. And the APR that they're telling me, I'm going to get, let's say, 4.25%. Okay. In 10 years, that will be worth $6,486.20. You're wanting to know how much something is worth in the future. So you use the future value. Let's take the opposite side of that. You, madam, are my wayward lost daughter. Now, I have just, when I found, easy girl. In the time out there, I know you're my kid now, so I am going to put you in my will for $1 million. And you say, yay! And I said, that's the good news. The bad news is I'm going to live for 20 more years. And you think, not if I can help it. No, you say, oh, boo. Okay, so let's see what that money is worth. That $1 million is worth now. So that means that you're doing a present value. So this would be 20 years. Let's say that bank, you could do a bank account. If you had the money now, you could do, let's say, 5.25% interest compounded monthly on $1 million. That's worth $350,740 right now. In other words, you could actually sell your claim on my will right now, and someone would buy it for $350,000. That's what it's saying. In other words, if I put in $350,740 right now in an account that paid 5.25% compounded monthly, and I held for 10 years or for 20 years, it would be $1 million. That's all you're saying. The only trick in this is knowing whether you're doing a present or a future value. This is lump sum. In other words, it's just one pop of money. If I say, what is it worth now? You know you're doing a present value. If I say in a problem, what will it be worth? And give you a number of years. Then you know that you're using a future value. Now there's a twist here that the book throws at you. It says, okay, suppose that you know how much you have now. How long would it take you to hit a target amount sometime in the future? How many years would it take? If I know the interest rate, know the compoundings. Okay, not bad, not hard. Let's say that I have $8,000. I'm going to put it into the bank, just one lump of money. And I want to know how long it'll take for that to turn into $20,000. If I have an account at 5.99%, compounded, let's say weekly. And again, as all you have to do is just double click right here and open it. That would take about 15.30 years. A little more than 15 years and 4 months. And the way the book shows you how to do this is with logarithms. And I have found that I get very little success after years of trying to get students to be able to use the logarithms, natural logarithms, the right way. This just doesn't even blink. What would take you 5 minutes, maybe 8 minutes to do by hand, this gives you is in a split second as soon as you put in the numbers. If I know an amount now, and I want to know how long it takes to get to another amount, this is all you have to do. Y'all good on that? I'm trying to make sure that you understand that this Excel is enormously powerful, and almost every one of you is going to be using Excel in the workplace. I don't know if I mentioned it to you. This story is just maybe a little more than a year old. There was a treasury manager, in other words, a finance manager, at a relatively large company out of Peoria. And she had hired some guy to do stuff that involved Excel. And she just walked by his desk one day, and there he was keying numbers into a column. And then he had a calculator. He was adding up the numbers in that column on his calculator so that he could put the result in the cell right below the numbers that he had just put in. there was a long conversation with him and a brutal training certification, but you don't have to do any of that anymore. That's in corporate America, in government jobs. You use Excel to take this tedium, the calculations, out of our workflow. And I'm getting you used to doing that by doing these templates. Now, let me do something here. I want you right now to kind of pretend to ignore the zero and the one. Excel has, zero and one are Excel's way of flagging whether you have an ordinary type of problem or a due type of problem. And I'll talk about this now. We'll go over here to the annuities. Now, an annuity, the word annuity simply means a cash flow. That's all it means. So you get paid every 2 weeks at your job. That's an annuity. It's just a rolling cash flow. You make monthly payments on a loan. That's an annuity. You get when you're old, you'll get a pension check every month. That's an annuity. All of these, they are just vastly important. Now, there are different types of annuities. And I won't beat up on this too much, but just make sure you know them, because it's kind of like a quick question on a quiz or a test. But the first kind that has to do with the timing of the annuity. There are several different kinds. There are the ones that are periodic. Periodic happens at regular intervals. We will do almost always in a class like this, periodic annuities. In other words, there's a regular interval, monthly, weekly, something like that. Non-periodics are a real pain in the butt. Excel can handle them, but you have to step up a level to get Excel to know that you're talking about non-periodics. It always assumes periodic, unless you tell it something else. So there are the periodic and then the non-periodic. Now, there's also another thing. Amount. There are level annuities and non-level. Most of what we do is level, but there are non-level annuities. In other words, same amount every time, different amounts every time. So your loan payment on a car loan is periodic and it's level because it's the same loan payment every time. And then there is this one, front, back. And I'm using terms that are, some of this is not in the book. Now, ordinary annuities. Ordinary annuities. They, payments at end of periods. Ordinary annuities. The payments are like a car loan. I get my car loan. 1 month later, I make my first payment. I start my job. In 2 weeks, I get my first payment. they are very common with present values. You just assume it's an ordinary annuity. If you're finding a present value, it's an ordinary annuity. In other words, if this is time zero, your first payment is here. Your first payment is here. In other words, they're happening at the ends of the periods. Now, the other side of that is the annuity due. Payments at beginnings of periods. Those are almost always associated with future values. Here's something you need to write down. Take me seriously. When I write problems for quizzes, for tests, I am trying my best to signal you that it's one of these oddball annuity due. The way I do it is I say, starting today, you put money into a bank account. So what happens with this one is that if I were to do, let's say, a five-year annuity. Now watch out for what I'm about to do here. You'll put in, let's say, 200, 200, 200, 200, 200. And then the future value is after that last 200 has percolated with the other 200s, one last period. So don't get confused when I say, what is the future value at the end of the period after you put in your last payment? That's what they do. Let me explain. Let me give you an example of this. I'm going to go with you. You look like you need a boost for your day. You have a significant relationship with someone, and that someone tells you, I think I'm with child. It happens. Now, the first thing you'll think, like I did when I heard that, is, you know, I'll kill myself. Yeah. But then you say, okay, well, the child is born. That day is monumental. I was exhausted. I mean, I was tired after that birth. And then, hey, you know, what I do? But you go out of there and you're feeling so exhilarated. You say, by golly, I'm going to make life great for this kid. I'm going to drive right to the bank and I am going to put in, this day that the child is born, I'm going to put in to the bank $2,500. And every year on that kid's birthday, I'm going to put in $2,500. Now, on the kid's 17th birthday, you put in the last of 18 payments. You see how it's 18? And then on the kid's 18th birthday, you pull it out and say, here's a check. That is an annuity due. It's a level annuity. It's periodic. And it is a classic future value problem. So again, the key is, I'll say, starting today, and then I'll say, how much is in the account 1 year or 1 month or whatever it is after you put in your last payment? There's a really practical thing that you can do with this. when you are thinking about, I want to buy a home someday, one of the things that will help your chances of getting the loan are is having a down payment. So a lot of people who are in the know about finances, or they have a financial planner, what they do is they say, okay, let's start today. And you get your paychecks every month, right?
Right.
Okay. So let's start today and put let's put in, let's say, $60 into an account, so that 1 month after you put in your last $60 over a five-year period, let's see what kind of a down payment you've got. Well, we can do that here. Now, the thing here is, you see that zero and one? That is Excel's signal of whether it's an ordinary annuity, a present value, or an annuity due as a future value. Now, what we're doing here is a future value. So we're going to say 5 years, and we're going to find an account that, let's say, pays semi-annually too. And you're going to, this is an account that pays, let's say, 4.69%. You just leave the money, don't touch the money during the period. And we're going to put in just $60 a month, see what happens. It's not very much. Oh, well. Okay. But anyway, one way or the other, though, I want to point out something down here. Effective rate. Now, if there is compounding more than once a year, the effective rate will be more than the APR, because compounding bumps up the standing rate just a little bit. Let me see if I got this. It's not a very big amount, but one way or the other, for 5 years. Oh, periods, time, 5 years. Yeah, periods. Okay. Yeah, that just kind of sucks as an amount of money, but it is a down payment. So the bottom line is, now, the one in the middle, all this does is calculate your payments on a loan. That's all it does. So let's say that you want a 6-year loan. Now, I'll just use one that's kind of realistic. And I just was looking at this a few weeks ago. It was a six-year loan, monthly payments. If it's monthly, you just put in 12. And I could get a loan for 6.09%. And this was on a ridge line. You put in what you're going to borrow, and that was $43,000 about. And so my monthly payments were going to be $714.46 a month. That's all it does, is just calculate that. That's it. Doesn't do anything more, doesn't do anything less. It just calculates what your payments are going to be. And that's a nice, nice thing. It gives you just a quick run of what's going to go on. Now, I'm not sure about this amortization table. I'm going to put in those numbers. The loan amount was $43,000. That was after my trade-in. And then it was 6.09% they told me I could get. Monthly payments, 12. And then the number of years was 6. And as you can see, you got the same answer over there. But what's nice about this is that this shows you, month by month, how much you're paying of your payment of $714.46, how much of that went to interest, and how much of it went to pay down the balance, and how much is left. That's called an amortization table. You may have seen those. I'm not sure if they're still showing those in accounting or not. But it's handy way to look at how fast your loan is dropping down. And as you can see, not surprisingly, at the 72nd month, in other words, exactly 6 years, you pay off the loan. And just kind of ignore all this, I made this so that it could take up to a 30-year loan. So for example, suppose that I wanted to borrow $180,000 on a home loan at 4.59%, 12 months, and the month, and you're going to do this for a 30-year loan. Your payments would be $921.68 a month. Here's the depressing part. You're not paying a whole lot on your principal right at first. Most of your payment is being eaten by interest for a long time. In fact, if I started with a $180,000 loan, and I wanted to see in what year or month I had paid off half of that. Half of 180,000 is 90,000. Right there, 237 months into the loan, you've just paid half of it. Now remember, this is a 360 month loan, 30 times 12. So only after 237 of those 360 months are you halfway to paying off the loan. That's a big problem, because that means in the early years of a loan, if the economy turns sour and your house value goes way down, you're what we call upside down on the loan. The loan isn't worth as much. I mean, the house isn't worth as much if the economy turns down as what you owe on it. And that's one of those dangerous things, is getting a home loan. Getting a home loan close to when a recession is going to start is just asking for trouble. And so it's just one of those things that we see as sort of a side note. Now, let me bring up this last one. A perpetuity is an annuity that goes on forever. A perpetuity is an annuity. In other words, it's a periodic annuity, and it's level, usually. We do them level, but there's a way to make them constant growth. It just goes on forever. You might ask yourself, well, when would you ever have something where there were payments forever? Well, there are two places. One is kind of an odd place, but then there is a whole set of forever payments. Now, in one case, just as a side historical note, there was a family that lent Napoleon Bonaparte a loan so he could have a war, fight something, couldn't afford it himself. And they said, you don't ever have to pay us off, just pay the interest on it every month, forever. Well, he thought that was an incredibly good idea. This is fantastic. I never have to pay off this millions of francs that they're lending. Well, it turns out that now, all these nearly 200 years later, the French government still has to make that loan, that interest payment. It is forever. It's a perpetuity. Classic example. Now, in a more realistic context, we use perpetuities. We assume that companies live forever. That's the thing about it's a going concern. There is no termination that is natural to a corporation. Now, many corporations do die. They go bankrupt, or they get absorbed, acquired, whatever. But there is no natural thing that requires that we terminate the cash flow of a corporation. One of the ways that we value the stock of corporations, if they're old and established, is through their dividends. And we assume that if the company lives forever, it will pay those dividends forever. And so we can find the present value of a perpetuity that is the forever amount of the dividend. Now, there is an actual formula for perpetuities. It's a really simple formula. It was found several hundred years ago, but it wasn't for finance. It's just a mathematical thing. That the present value of a level periodic perpetuity is nothing but the payment per period divided by the periodic interest rate. Which would be the APR over the number of periods. And that's a finite number. In other words, if you add up the present value at 1 plus the present value at payment 2 plus the present value at payment 3 to infinity, it settles to a number. And this is how you do it. Oh, by the way, can you put in your attendance radar right? I almost forgot about that. Thank you for doing that. And I'll check something here real quick. The future value, F4 over F3, and then come F3 times F2, F3 times F2. That future value just looks so lame to me. But that's all right. And the amount of F7, 0, yeah, 1. That's right. That's kind of depressing that after all those periods, after all those payments, you've got only about $683. Well, one way or the other, let me try something here. 6.55%. Yeah, that's unfortunately. Oh, well, anyhow. Okay, now, the perpetuity. Now, I did one here, how you can calculate what's called an endowment. What we do is, in a classic example of a perpetuity, where we can do a calculation, is we will have wealthy donors at the end of their lives, or maybe in their older years. They will just donate to the university, ours, any university, a large amount of money. And maybe they'll be endowing some kind of a chair in a department. But what we want to know is, okay, how much of that could we spend every year and never touch the principal amount? So in this example, let me do an example here. Suppose someone donates an endowment for like a department chair or something like that, $250,000. Okay, we go to a bank and we say, how much will we earn by putting that $250,000 in here? Then they say 3.89% compounded semi-annually. Well, what that means is that we could every year forever, I mean every 6 months forever, this is, take out $4,862.50 and never, ever touch the $250,000. Now, a university I'm familiar with, they just got an endowment for $10 million. I think that's, yeah. And they were able to secure rather high, 4.09 compounded quarterly. So they'll be able every quarter to spend $102,250, and they will never touch the $10 million. That's how we do things in academic institutions. These endowment funds, sometimes called foundation funds. This is what they are. They're just the accumulation of these powerful big money donations. And then we put them with a bank that gives us a guaranteed annual rate, compounded a certain time, number of times a year. And then we know exactly what we can take out of that account every, in this case, every quarter, and never touch the $10 million. That is how, what perpetuities, their biggest thing is used for that. Now, if you just need to calculate a perpetuity, here's how you do it. You just use the one on the left. Just put in your annual discount rate, your periods for a year, and how much the payments are that are going to happen every, in this case, every four times every year forever. And the present value of that is $133,000. That's what it's worth now as a present value. So that's a perpetuity. And the bottom line of these, what I'm doing here, is trying to convince you that what you really need to do is not memorize formula, get it all written down like you have it in the book or you get it on some website. What you need to do is to know where to put the numbers. I give you a word problem. You just need to know, okay, is this a lump sum? Is this an annuity? Or is it a perpetuity? Do I need a present value or do I need a future value? And once you have determined that, you will know what sheet to use to get the answers. And if you get good at this, which almost all of you will, Lord knows there will be a few stragglers, you can get these big quantitative problems on my on quizzes that are from now on and the midterm and the final. All you have to do is know how to put numbers into Excel. Just extract them from the word problems, put them in, and then put your answer down in the number box in Canvas whenever I give you a quantitative problem. So if now, if any of you would rather do it by, you know, pencil and paper, let me know and I can show that to you in my office. But for most of you, this is going to be a superior way. It's a new technology. We don't walk across the country. We don't ride horses. We don't do that. We use cars. We use planes. And that's Excel. This is how we do it in the modern age. And that's why I have you doing a certification in Excel, is because I want you as ready as you can be to face that big bad world out there with AIs all over the place. And by the way, be careful with AIs in Excel. Most of them will be happy to do an Excel sheet for or get a problem done using Excel. They almost always, unless they are very heavy DNNs, deep neural networks, they get them wrong. And I even have handed an AI my templates, and it still gets the answers wrong. I said, here it is, just use it. And they screw it up. ChatGPT, Gemini, Copilot, they don't know Excel even when you give them the template for it. So that's just a caution. And that's all I have for you today. I thank you for being here.